And this group is, they've always been about the next thing. They've really done a great job of whether it was the opening season loss to UMass, moving on to a huge win against Rutgers the following week, or dealing with a tough one against Cornell and moving on to Naval Academy game, or just putting together a 9-game winning streak in between. They've done a very good job of moving on to the next.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Today's episode is presented by Larry Parker, MD. Dr. Parker is a specialist in spine surgery, treating disorders of the spine, including cervical, thoracic, and lumbar. Based in Huntsville, Alabama, and an old friend of the pod, he also performs minimally invasive surgery, both laparoscopically and endoscopically. So much happening this week, Dixie. So let's get it. Dix, how about them Jays?
What a game. What a game. What a lot of game. Fun to call. Great environment. Great game. I mean, you know, nip and tuck, nail biter all the way. And Hopkins, a reversal of fortune a year after the most embarrassing loss in the history of that rivalry in the history of the series for Johns Hopkins, 22-7. That was, believe it or not, wasn't even that close. They come back and not only compete, but win at University of Maryland on Saturday, this past Saturday night. So gigantic win, gives the Blue Jays the number two seed in the upcoming Big Ten tournament. They get a bye this week. They don't have to play in the quarterfinals, and they'll await the winner of Maryland Rutgers.
And they get to host. So as we often do, let's rewind and go back to last week before we discuss the very important games that are coming up this week. And as we started, the discussion really starts with not only the Hopkins-Maryland game, but some of the other rivalry games that took place last week.
Well, wait a minute. Before we rewind and talk about the on-the-field action, let's talk off the field, a little men's health PSA. You just had a colonoscopy, right?
I did. I'm at that age or past that, really. And I had to get that done earlier this week, and it was the experience I expected.
So wait, was this your first colonoscopy?
It was, yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. And
what'd you think?
It wasn't as bad as I thought. They sedate you and then you wake up and it's all over. The worst part is all the prep stuff.
Yeah, drinking. No one cares about the actual procedure. Yeah. How'd the prep go?
You have to drink all that. I was complimented on a few things. One, my prep. The doctor afterwards said, you did excellent prep work.
Nice work.
Thanks. I just followed the instructions. And then also the woman who had to give me the IV, she said, I have lovely veins. Lovely veins.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you do the powder or the liquid prep? And if you, no matter which one you did, what did you mix it with?
Yeah, they were pretty specific and made it easy for me. They said, take some Ducalax pills.
Oh.
First. And then I had to take the powder. So it was called Miralax. And you mix the powder with Gatorade. Gatorade.
Yeah.
So I found some white Gatorade that was cherry flavor or something like that. And just mixed it in with that.
Good and call. Drank that. It always astounds me that Gatorade has always been marketed as being like healthy or whatever. But you have a white drink flavored cherry. How does that work?
Yeah, it's I think they... The process dehydrates you so much, like anything that'll give you.
Oh, no. You need Gatorade. You need Powerade. You need something with electrolytes in it to get you through those few hours. And you get real good at like jumping off the couch, you know.
Well, I felt really bad because Bennett had a baseball game the night before and I had already started. And it was his first game of the season. And Amy said, maybe we should drive. I said, maybe go separately, but I don't think I'll be able to make it. I don't think stay very far from, especially anywhere place where there are not real bathrooms. And I was like, no, I gotta stay home.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
On your first colonoscopy, and you got a good result. So that's wonderful.
And that was
so men get funny. Checked it. Men get it. It's not yeah. fun. It's not a picnic, but it is definitely, definitely necessary.
Yeah, it's really not that bad. Okay, let's move on, please, please. Let's move on. Let's talk about some of the games last week. Not just Hopkins, Maryland, but Army, Navy. Let's talk about Ohio State, Michigan, and other big games that took place, and get your overall thoughts on the weekend.
Yeah. So Army, Navy. I was really surprised that they moved that game from 7 p.m. to 1 p.m. this past Saturday, which meant and so I knew there was weather being forecast in the area. We at the Big Ten Network had a similar exploration of moving the Maryland game from 6 p.m. to earlier in the day. But if you looked at the weather forecast, and correct me if I'm wrong, but College Park isn't that far from Annapolis, right?
It's about 25, 30 minutes top.
Yeah. So the radar showed at 6 p.m. like a 15% chance of thunderstorms. And then at 7 p.m. things were clear. There were rain, but no thunder. And listen, the weather in the Baltimore, D.C. area on Saturday was no joke. From about, 2 o'clock until like 5. There were high winds, lightning. I don't even know if lightning came, to be honest with you, but I know it was heavy rain, wind, et cetera, et cetera. The reason I say this is because that game was not televised live. It was moved up and it had to be streamed. So I thought it was really lame that they moved the game time of Army Navy.
I honestly didn't watch any of it because I already knew the result.
Well, because it was tape delayed.
Yeah,
I think it was put on at 7 o'clock, tape delayed on CBS Sports Network. Look, I get safety. I get, the protection of the fans and student athletes, and you want to get the game in, and you don't want it to be interrupted, yada, yada, yada. Guess what? Maryland Hopkins, we didn't have any interruptions. Started on time, incredible atmosphere, live television. So that was I felt bad for the student athletes for both Army and Navy. Let's go to the field. Army led 9-2 at half, went away with 11-6 win, further solidified their hold to get the number one seed in the Patriot League tournament. They play BU this weekend to really meet that out. But Army continues to do it. It's just like a kind of a faceless Black Knight team that just continues to get the job done.
There were some other big games in the ACC and in the Big Ten. Anything that jumps out at you?
Well, look, Michigan defeating Ohio State at home to secure the number 4 seed. So congratulations to Kevin Connery and his Wolverines. They host for the first time ever a Big Ten tournament game. They'll play this Saturday, I believe, at 3:30. And the Buckeyes continue to struggle a little bit. They've dropped out of the RPI top 20 now. But they'll have a rematch against Michigan, like I just mentioned, this Saturday. The Ivy League continues to be interesting, going back and forth. Vermont continues to win in the America East. Got to give a tip of the cap. I didn't know Mount St. Mary's was playing so well in their conference. They got the number 2 seed in their conference tournament. And Delaware continues to impress in the Colonial. They knocked off Drexel this past weekend. Atlantic 10 heating up, nice win for St. Joe's over UMass. So they, the Hawks, it seemed to be like a 3-team race in the A-10, the Hawks, UMass, and Richmond. What's so funny?
I watched the end of that game, and they it's streamed from St. Joe's, and the angle is so low that fans, when they stand up, they block the camera on both ends of the field. And it's just... They have to figure something out there because it wasn't good.
God bless them. Duke was off this week. Notre Dame beats North Carolina. Virginia hammers Syracuse. I will say this, and I'm gonna sound like a crotchety old man. Apparently, I sounded like an old man on the Hopkins Maryland game. Some of my friends directed me to the Lax Power, whatever that forum's called, that said Mark Dixon with the old man takes. Or something like that.
What specifically do I need to know? Because I've heard these old man takes.
Well, So there are a couple terrific individual goals this weekend scored in the Army-Navy game and then the Virginia-Syracuse game. And those goals obviously are making the rounds on social media, Instagram in particular. And look, they're great plays, but at the end of the day, both of the players that made those plays played for teams that lost the games. So I'm just like, what about the value of a win? You know, the value of a team effort. And you know, it's cool to see the creativity and, you know, to see the flair and that kind of thing. It does make the game great. Those guys lost. And I'm just, you know, what is Bo Schembechler's famous quote? The old Michigan football coach, the team, the team, the team. You know, that to me is the most important thing. So it's kind of funny when you're watching these clips. And, yeah, they're great. And, you know, the Syracuse-Virginia game, that was a live audience that got to see it. Obviously, Army-Navy, unless you stream CBS, you didn't get to see that Navy goal, you know, until it was rebroadcast and you already knew the result. But I don't know. I feel like the teams need to be celebrated more, you know, Army and Virginia winning those games versus, you know, guys on the other team scoring great goals and their teams got hammered. What do you think? Am I being too harsh?
I think that any opportunity to celebrate the game of lacrosse, whether it's the team or an individual play that's fun to see, should be shown, celebrated, talked about. But at the end of the day, it's about winning lacrosse games. That's what gets you to play in May and moves you towards a title, whether it's a conference title or an NCAA title. That's what it's all about. Those are the things you'll remember. You'll remember who won the national championship. You won't remember an individual play here or there.
Understood.
All right. Let's get to the games this week, Dix. There's a lot of them and a lot of important games. And it starts on Friday night in the Big East when number 11, Villanova, who's 10-3, will take on number 8, Georgetown in D.C. Georgetown's 9-3. That game is at 7 o'clock on Friday.
So that's a race I didn't mention when you asked me to talk about last weekend. And the Big East is shaping up to be really interesting. Georgetown, Denver, Villanova. Could that be a 3-bid league? I'm not sold on that, but Georgetown sits in the RPI at 9, Denver at 11, Villanova at 12. Villanova probably has the biggest win amongst the three out of conference, taking down Penn State back in February. So that's going to be a gigantic chip in the back pocket of the Wildcats. Georgetown beat Denver head-to-head. Denver has beaten Villanova, beat him a couple weeks ago, 12-6. That was the game, remember, we were commenting that that was like a no-win situation for Villanova. That was the Bill Tierney at home in Peter Barton Stadium tribute game. Villanova also owns a win over Penn, which is kind of everybody's strength of schedule, RPI darling, as Penn sits at number 10 with a record of 6-5. So huge game this weekend between the Hoyas and the Wildcats. You know, I know we always kind of joke we're of the age that we remember the 1985 NCAA championship game, Patrick Ewing, invincible Hoyas going down to the Villanova Wildcats. This game is at Georgetown, so slight advantage there to the Hoyas. Should be a great game.
In the Patriot League, Boston University, who's 9-3 overall, 6-1 in the Patriot League, will travel to Army on Friday night to take on the number 9 Army team, who's 10-2 and 7-0, undefeated in the Patriot League. That game's at 8:15. Before we get to that game, let's bring in our guest this week, Army head coach Joe Alberici. Please welcome into the show the head coach of Army West Point, Joe Alberici. Now in his 17th season at the helm, his Black Knights are 10-2 on the season as they prepare for a big Patriot League game against Boston University Friday night. Coach, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Dan, great to be with you and Mark, but I feel a little cheated early. I'm in 18th season. So you earn them all around here at West Point. So I want to make sure there. I'm still trying to coach to catch Coach Emmer, who's at 22. So I need them all to count. So you're number 18.
My apologies. All right. I didn't mean to slight you.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you. The Black Knights currently 10-2, heading into the showdown with the Terriers this coming weekend. You're coming off of a gigantic win over Navy for many, many reasons. But it was a game that the game time was shifted and you didn't learn about it until you were traveling down to Annapolis. How did that process work and how did it affect your team, if at all?
Yeah. Well, Mark, Joe reached out to me. Joe Amplo reached out to me around noon on Friday. We were traveling down to Annapolis and just said that there's some consideration about the weather being, or because of the weather, that the game time being changed and knowing it was on TV, I knew there would be some complications with it all in all. And, you know, he just wanted to get my thoughts and you know, what my input in it. Of course, I reach out to our administrators and really, you know, by the time any of that came to fruition on our end, they had already come back and said, hey, this is what we're going to do. This game is at 1 o'clock. Joe shared the weather reports that they had coming from the yard about the potential storms, high winds from the nighttime. So, you know, what I did is I just, we traveled down in two buses and just sent a text out to the team and let them know. Mark, we never addressed it again. You know, I never brought it up at any of the team meals. Talked to the captains about it a little bit, but never as a team, and just felt like there was an inevitability of us having to play this game at 1 o'clock. So by bringing it up or addressing it, I might be bringing more attention to it than needed to be. You know, they let their parents know. Our administration informed everybody on this end, you know, what was going to happen, and there was still a game to be played, and we still had to play our best 60 minutes, regardless of when that game started. So that was our approach, and you know, I think our guys were ready to play, even with the early start.
Not only were they ready to play against Navy last weekend, but this is an Army team that again stands at 10-2, and you lost a ton of talent from last year's 2022 edition, chief of which Brendan Nickturn, the Patriot League Offensive Player of the Year, arguably, maybe the best player in the Patriot League has seen since Pat Spencer at Loyola University. What's been working this year for Army, being able to get to that 10-2 record? Really, you know, week in and week out, you look at the results and you just keep having success. And no one really knows who the guys are for Army, just getting this job done.
Yeah. I would go a lot right back to the leadership of the team. You know, our captains, Quinn Binney, Andrew Kelly, Jake Morin, you know, the smaller senior class that we have, but have been very big in the leadership department for us, the upperclassmen. There was a definite understanding of the great talent and the void of leadership, you know, the 18 seniors and those guys certainly had the mantle in terms of the leadership of the team. And so throughout the fall, I was working on just developing our voices, developing our leadership voices. With that, Mark, the guys also had a little chip on their shoulder. Nobody had this team ranked in their top 25 anywhere. Not that we're all into it, but it was a little something that our guys talked about, and they've just been able to improve each and every week. I mean, that's the very unique thing about this team and the fact that there was such great inexperience. So we talked about those 18 seniors, 15 of them played major roles. So you talked about Brendan, who, again, you know, incredible first team All-American, Patriot League Player of the Year 2 years in a row, the Rookie of the Year in the Pro League. I mean, you know, he's a heck of a player. But, you know, along with that was Bobby Abshire, Danny Kolbasa, all four short stick DMs, Wyatt Schupler, a 3-year starter in the goal, Tyler Ulrich, Brian Lehman, you know, so there's just a lot of guys that we were replacing and getting minutes. So when we lined up against UMass, in our opener, we played 25 guys. About 18 of them were seeing their very first significant college action. So we do have freshmen, but upperclassmen, talented players that were inexperienced. So, we still are in a situation. Our goaltender, Knox Dent, first-year starter as a senior, he's going to play in his 10th game this weekend, as a starter. So what that does for us, and I think what this group has done a great job of, is seeing that as a source of strength and a belief that we can continue to get better, that our ceiling might be higher than some teams that have more experience than we do, simply because the opportunity to get better by the experiences we had are a little steeper, a little higher climb. So long-winded answer to you. I think that combination, though, of hey, we want to show you something, and as well as a belief that we can continue to get better, we're not a finished product, has driven this team to where you see it today.
Along those lines, some of the newer faces, if you will, seeing game action, who are the leaders of this 2023 Army team?
Amongst the less experienced guys, I would go to, I would go to the experience we have, Jake Morin, Reese Burek, Paul Johnson. Those are the guys that played two attackmen in Paulie J and Reese. Those guys played alongside Brendan, obviously had a very different role this year. And then defensively, AJ Pilot has been a guy that we have really relied on. He was a freshman starter, the very first freshman close defenseman to start for me in my previous 17 years. And he did that last year for us and developed into our number one cover guy. So, we've looked to those guys to bring on field stability. Deacon Donaldson was another guy that had played for us, but through injury. And then as it happened, he breaks his wrist in the first quarter of the UMass game. So he's been a welcome addition coming back too, because he's created a lot of leadership, on-field leadership, and great voice.
Coach, in addition to your Army team, there are a handful of Patriot League teams playing really well right now as regular season comes to a close. As a representative of the Patriot League, what's your sales pitch to the committee, to the lacrosse world, that the Patriot League deserves a multiple bids to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of history to that in terms of just I think there's been multiple years where there's been multiple deserving teams that have come out of here or come out of our out of the Patriot League. You look to Loyola, a team that is always dangerous with a couple of Big Ten wins early. We have a Big Ten win early. You've got BU, who's been terrific with a win over an Ivy League team. So I know it doesn't. I thought we were, Cornell scores with 9 seconds to go to beat us, and they're pretty well thought of. So I think that. Nationally, we've always competed at a high level and continue to do that again this year. I don't know, Dan, I'm probably the last guy in the league to talk about like that. We really have been focused on ourselves and what's coming next. And I can tell you a lot about BU because they're our next one and the others, maybe not as much after we played them. So, it's been a great league. It's always a very competitive league. I know as we move into the Patriot League tournament, there's going to be six teams that are going to believe that they can win this thing.
In the recruiting landscape, Joe, the service academies, Army, Navy, Air Force, get a little bit of a jump start, if you will, with that July 1 contact date versus September 1. How does that help you, if at all, And maybe, you know, kind of change the landscape and give you guys an opportunity to get that 60-day head start with some of the recruits that you would love to see come to West Point.
Sure. I think in some ways it's a little overplayed, Mark, in the fact that the young men who choose a service academy, say before the other institutions get an opportunity to speak with them, they would probably be going to one of our places anyway. You know, this is something that at some point in their time, they were taken by the magnitude of the institutions and service to your country. And it likely wouldn't have been swayed by, you know, any other place. I think there is some situations that maybe happen in a September, October, where the 60 days gives you an opportunity to develop relationships that otherwise might not have been developed because they would have been hearing from, you know, 60 teams on the one on that day, and you are the only one. So there are some unique situations like that. They typically will take all of their visits, and you know, you may end in, you know, you might have that opportunity after they've done that to coach them. But so in one level, I think it can get a little overplayed, and then there's another side of it. There are some unique cases where down the road, after they've seen everything, maybe that relationship that we've been able to develop as a coaching staff has helped us.
Coach, as you just described, working at an academy is a unique, different than a lot of the other lacrosse jobs. And you've been in Army for almost 2 decades now. Almost. You're catching up to Coach Emmer. What's the coolest aspect about the experience of working at West Point?
Well, the relationships that you get to develop with some of the finest young people that this country has to offer is something that is, I just feel so blessed, I guess is the best way to put it. Just blessed to watch their shared experiences that go beyond the lacrosse field, their shared experiences that they have, develop a brotherhood that is so uncommon. You know, in many other institutions, you have the lacrosse experience, and you know, Mark, I'm sure you feel that with your Hopkins brethren, and Dan, I know you probably feel that with your football, the guys that you're tight with them. It just goes further at this institution because they all take the same courses the first 2 years. There's some things that you do off the field in terms of your leadership development that are difficult, but you do it together. You do it together. So to watch that brotherhood grow throughout and now having the perspective of, as you said, nearly 2 decades to see that continue is really, really special. And I think, you know, from a personal standpoint, the last thing I would add is just they're going to go on to be second lieutenants in the Army. And regardless of the 17 different branches of which they choose to serve the country in, the common thread is leadership and what they have to lead people. And to know that our program, the Army Lacrosse family, has a significant effect on them and how they're going to go on to lead the nation's soldiers is something that I take, you know, very much to heart, and is again a blessing to have. Help share in that responsibility with, you know, Kyle George Ellis and Justin Ward, our longtime members of the coaching staff here. Like we all take that very serious. It's nobody's going to leave here and go be an accountant, you know, which that's a great job. So I'm not saying anything negative about it, but the leadership that you're gaining through our program, that isn't necessarily applicable to what you do job-wise. Here, for everyone, it's applicable, you know, and what it means to be part of something bigger than yourself, what it means to be, sacrificing for those around you. That's what you have to do as a leader, and they're learning that in our program, as well as the institution, of course. And it makes it a special experience.
What would you do if one of your players became an accountant coach?
Well, I'm sure they are, but for 5 years, they're not. Five years, they're not. You know, we have guys that go into finance at
sure.
Within the Army, like you, something that you can, in the way you can serve, and many of them have gone on to be very, very successful business people. But there is a 4 or 5 years where they are calling on other skills that they have.
Understood. We're around tax time, so you know, had to put some account jokes in there. Big one coming up this Friday. You guys host Boston University. This is an opportunity for Army to clinch the number one seed, win the regular season championship outright for the Patriot League, national televised game, senior night. When you think about Boston University and this game on Friday night, what's been the approach and what's been the focus this week?
Yeah. So you hit on it a little earlier, Mark, around, you know, what the previous week means to us. It's the biggest game of the year for us. So just managing, on, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday to get us to practice was the focus from the coaching staff and getting us on to the next thing. Fortunately for us, and this group, is they've always been about the next thing. They've really done a great job of, whether it was the opening season loss to UMass, moving on to a huge win against Rutgers the following week, or dealing with a tough one against Cornell and moving on to Naval Academy game, or just putting together a 9-game winning streak in between. They've done a very good job of moving on to the next. So they have done that. One of the things that throughout has been just that idea of improving, you know, and getting better. And the message this week has been nothing different. All of those things that you've mentioned, I have yet to mention to our team. Do I know they know? Absolutely. I know they know, but that's, all of those things aren't going to help us play better or beat Boston. You know, us trying to get better individually, collectively, and then understanding our opponent. Those are the things that, give us an opportunity to be successful. So that's where our focus has been. And even leading up to, you know, these next couple of days, you won't hear that conversation coming from the coaching staff, and I think our players do a great job of just, certainly not outwardly talking all about it. It's going to be about trying to put together our best 60 minutes of the season, and if we're able to do that, then that's just going to give us a great chance to get all of those things that you talked about. So, you know, that process-oriented way, this group, every team talks about it. This group has really done a great job of embracing that, and we hope it continues through this weekend.
Joe, a couple of fun questions, non-lacrosse related, to bring this one home. Appreciate your time, and we ask every coach these questions. So one of the fun aspects of working in a college athletics department is getting build relationships with other coaches and to get to know student athletes from other teams. If there's one particular team at Army that you love to go watch play, which one is it and why?
Well, I would say I love our women's lacrosse program. You know, I'm a big fan of Michelle Tumalo, as I was of Kristen Skyra, who's down at Virginia Tech now. I have a great appreciation for what they do, and also have a daughter that plays lacrosse. So my interest in the sport has picked up as her interest in the sport has picked up. But I would say that, you know, it's really good up here. The basketball programs, have been, you know, where I've gone to watch, because I think of the similarities between our hoops in hoops and in lacrosse. Brian Riley, is a dear friend of mine. He's our hockey coach, and has been, you know, O'Reilly has been the head hockey coach at United States Military Academy. I believe it's now 67 years. Dad, brother, and Brian. So I just love the legacy that they have there, and how Brian continues to coach to it. And then you watch our football program and Jeff Munkin. You know, I don't believe that there's many college coaches that are doing more with what they have than Coach Munkin is. So there's great appreciation for that. But you can go all across the board. Brian Plotkin in our soccer program, I feel like his team has really overachieved the last couple of years, and have had some sit downs with him. And even though he's a little newer to the academy, just to chat with him. And you know, Tracy Chow in our women's program, soccer program. There's just so much to learn from so many. And when you get it at an institution, and again, I use the word blessed. I'm so blessed to be here. And the greatest blessing of all is just the quality of people that clearly are the makeup in the cadets, but the quality of people that are attracted to come coach at a place like this. You know, and I've mentioned, you know, Kyle George Ellis being here for 12 years and Justin Ward being here for 6 years, Travis Johnson, the former NJIT coach, coming and working with us this season. You know, you just, those are just quality human beings on top of being great coaches. And that's what you have that permeates really the rest of the academy. So, you know, great place to, even though I've been here 18 years, I feel like there's so much to learn and continue to learn, and so many great people to learn from.
All right, Coach, this is probably the most important question of the entire interview. If someone's coming into town, family, friends, maybe a recruit, what restaurants do you recommend that they go eat at? What are some of your favorite restaurants in West Point?
I'm not always the greatest guy around this. I ask all the new people like where the restaurants are, and I have an amazing wife, Petra, who we've been together 22 years now, but God bless her, because it isn't because of all of the restaurant dates that I take her on that we're still together. you know, there's a couple of go-tos that our family loves is the Hacienda, which is right here in town. And you know, I would say that was our biggest go-to. I feel like I might leave something out there, but I'll settle in on that one right there in Highland Falls. The old Hacienda is the go-to.
Perfect. Thank you, Coach. Thanks so much for your time, and best of luck to your team this Friday night and throughout the postseason.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you, giving me some time here to talk about our boys. So I'm immensely proud of all of them. So appreciate it, Dan. Thanks, Mark. And you guys are phenomenal at what you do, and keep it going.
So BU's only conference loss was to Navy a few weeks ago. And that's when Navy really turned their season around. If Army wins, they're the number one seed in the Patriot League tournament. The semifinals and the finals will be at Mikey Stadium. I'm not sure how the tiebreakers work. I mean, the Patriot League, I'd have to go look at the Patriot League tiebreakers, because it gets complicated, because it's a 9-team league and 6 teams make the cut. So right now you're looking at Army or BU is going to be the one. And then you have the 3-4-5 could be either Lehigh, Navy, or Loyola based on results this weekend. Navy plays Bucknell. Loyola travels to Lehigh. And then Lafayette, congratulations to the Leopards. They have secured the number 6 seed. So what we know is Army or BU will be 1-2, and then Lafayette will be 6. We just don't know who 3, 4, 5 are at this point. But, you know, the Terriers got out to a little bit of a rocky start, but they have corrected the ship, playing really good lacrosse as of late. I think the only hiccup over the last month for them has been Yale, a midweek game where they dropped that game to the Bulldogs. And Army just keeps getting it done. I mean, they suffered an overtime loss to Cornell, another out-of-conference situation similar to BU, but they held C.J. Kearse to 0 goals. You know, this is an Army team that lost Brendan Nickturn, the best player in the Patriot League last year, for the last couple of years, honestly, and they've continued to win. So this game will be interesting, and again, I'd have to look at the tiebreaker scenarios to see, you know, based on if Army wins, they're the outright number one. If they lose, you know, what does that mean for who becomes the number one seed?
Two huge games in both the Big East and the Patriot League on Friday night. We'll get to Saturday's matchups right after the break.
Are you or a loved one suffering from back or neck pain? Dr. Larry Parker is a spine care specialist in Huntsville, Alabama, with over 25 years of experience performing complex spine and neck surgeries. Dr. Parker has designed a website to help patients like you understand the treatment options available. This website features animations of the most common spine surgeries, patient testimonials, and updates on the latest technology, including robotic and minimally invasive surgeries. Visit LarryParkerMD.com to learn more.
All right, Dick, Saturday starts off with a play-in game for the postseason in the Ivy League when number 16 Yale, 7-4 overall, plays at Harvard, who's 5-6 on the season. They're both 2-3 in the Ivy League, and whoever wins this game will get the 4th seed in the Ivy League tournament.
So help me out. I haven't been paying attention to the Ivies maybe as much as I should. What's the landscape looking like? You say this is a playing game. Winner gets the 4, and the loser is out.
So Cornell, Princeton, and Penn are in the tournament.
Okay.
The loser of this game is out. Yale's high RPI of 8 could conceivably keep them in the national playoff picture, but I think this is an elimination game for whoever loses this game, especially Yale included, for the postseason. I think it'll drop their RPI. Cornell is the number one team in the Ivy League right now, followed by Princeton, followed by Penn. If Princeton beats Cornell, they'll be the number one seed. Cornell will be the number two seed. Penn will be 3. The Yale-Harvard winner will be 4. If Princeton loses, because Penn and Princeton will each have 2 losses, Penn's overtime win over Princeton makes them the 2 seed. So it'll be Cornell, Penn, Princeton, Yale, Harvard winner.
Wow. Congratulations. Well done. You've got it all figured out. Where I got to go look at the Patriot League, you're locked into the Ivies.
Yeah. There's less teams.
Do you have a rooting interest, I guess?
I have a slight rooting interest.
Yeah, but I know you do. So Yale, biggest win out of conference, Denver. So that their RPI combined with currently is a top 15 RPI win. Yeah, maybe. But you got to hand it to the Eli. They've won 4 in a row after losing 3 in a row, 2 of which were drubbings at the hands of Cornell and Princeton by 10 plus goals each. But, you know, since then they've rattled off wins against BU, Dartmouth, Brown, went to Albany last Friday night, took care of the Danes. Now they get Harvard, a team who has lost to Dartmouth and has beaten Cornell. So will the real Crimson please stand up? Terrific game on tap. The game's at Harvard, you know, different kind of atmosphere. Should be, winner take the 4 seed. I love it. Let's see how this plays out.
In the ACC, number 15, Syracuse, who's 8-6 on the season, takes on number 2, Duke in Durham. Blue Devils are 11-2. This game is at 1:00. This is a huge opportunity for the Orange and to improve their resume.
You said it. Huge opportunity for Syracuse. They almost beat Duke back in early March, lost 14-13 in overtime in a game that I believe, if I recall correctly, it's going back a ways, but I believe Syracuse led that game the entire way. Look, Syracuse, 8-6. If they lose this, are they probably out of the running for an NCAA tournament berth? More than likely. But I think, you know, I think the Syracuse team has really developed through the season. And, you know, the freshmen have grown up. They've gotten a ton of experience. They've improved. I think right now, though, you know, in Durham against a rested Duke team that really is in contention to be potentially a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, I think it's a tall order for Syracuse. But that's why they play the games. And, you know, we'll see how everything shakes out. That game will be on ESPNU Saturday at noon.
Big game in the Ivy League this week, besides Yale and Harvard, in my opinion, is number 20 Princeton plays at number 6 Cornell. And as we talked about earlier, this game is for the number one overall seed in the Ivy League tournament.
It's big. I don't see – Cornell's proven to be mortal this year. I do think they are the best team in the Ivy League, but I don't think it's a runaway by any stretch. So, I mean, when you look at the lay of the land, Princeton beat Penn 18-12. They've beaten Yale 20-10. You know, who they get, you know, as the one would get the 4. If you're the 2, you get the 3. It's going to be a combination of either Penn or Yale or Harvard. Let's look at the Harvard result. Yeah, Cornell lost to Harvard. I just said that a minute ago. Why can't I remember it minute to minute? 10-8. So, you know, it's all a matter of you'd love to be the number one seed. You'd love to take that regular season championship in the Ivy League. So game is at Schoolcraft Field. I think Cornell is the better team of the two. And Princeton's just seem to be, I mean, you follow them more than I do. They seem to be inconsistent at times. Is that accurate?
Yes. For sure. They've had some, every team's been banged up. They've had some significant injuries, losing their, you know, their top faceoff guy for the season, losing
right.
Sammy English, who's like the do-it-all midfielder for the season, as well as another player for the year. Alex Schlusher, who had a great season as a junior, has struggled at times early in the season, was injured, missed some games, and is now running out of the midfield. And the attack unit seems to be improved with the new people playing. And again, as well as both of the goalies have played this season, I think just settling that situation and finally making a decision and giving, I think that just settles your whole defense, gives your team a little bit more confidence. And they've played well lately. I mean, they have some opportunities. If they could, you know, a lot of people wrote off Princeton as saying your only opportunity right now is to win the Ivy League championship and get the automatic qualifier. But a win over Cornell, and then say you get Yale in the semifinals and a team you beat by more than 10 goals earlier this season, you play them again, you beat them. Those are a couple of really good wins to go with your Yale win earlier in the season. Your RPI moves up. They're in the consideration for an at-large berth, but it all starts this Saturday at 3 o'clock at Schoolcraft Field. They got to beat Cornell.
Yeah, currently sitting, Princeton is 16 in the RPI. So you're right. The RPI is going to improve no matter the result this weekend against Cornell, who's a 6 RPI. But having that, what would be currently a top 10 win, mm-hmm. would be gigantic for the Tigers.
Yeah.
That game, Cornell-Princeton, always has a special place in my heart. The reason is that was the first men's game that I did play-by-play for.
Really?
And I don't remember the year, but I do remember that game. It was me and Matt Ward. It was at Princeton in Tiger Woods, Class of 52 Stadium. And Tyler Fiorito made these incredible saves, like 2 or 3 in a row, a sequence in the same play. And they included that in a like a montage as like a teaser for the Ivy League tournament, my call of his saves. So that's why it always has a special place in my heart.
That's a cool story, Dick.
That was a really big deal to me.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really neat.
You could care less, but it was a big deal to me.
No, what I'm thinking is Tyler Fiorito, to me, doesn't seem like he played that long ago, but you've been broadcasting for a long time. So if that was your first game, I'm trying to place when that was, because I remember
it was, yeah, it was probably like 8-10 years ago.
Okay.
Is when it was. Yeah.
All right.
The only years I remember, I have this conversation often. The only years I remember are my high school and college years, meaning, hey, remember that time, sophomore year at college, you know, and I know that was 1992. In adulthood, the only years I remember are when I was married and when my kids were born. That's it. Say, like, hey, remember that year we went, remember that time we went to Disney? Yeah, what year was that? I have no idea.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. And we had a pandemic, and it's like, was it before, during, after? Yeah, it's that's funny. That's funny you say. It's so true. It's so true.
2020, though, is a clean number when the pandemic hit. So you can always go back to that 2020 and be like, true. The pandemic, oh, yeah, it's been 3 years. Oh, my God, it's been 3 years.
That's funny. I got to think about that a little bit more, but that's so true. All right, the next two games are the Big Ten tournament games that are on Saturday. Are you doing one of these games?
Yes. So Joe and I will have Rutgers, Maryland, Saturday night, 8 o'clock.
Well, let's start with Ohio State at Michigan, number 17, ranked Michigan. They're 6-6. Ohio State's 5-8. This game is at 3:30 in the afternoon, and it's a must-win game for Ohio State. Well, for both these teams, for their postseason chances at all, they have to win this game.
Yeah, so here's the deal. Michigan, 6-6. They lose this game, their season's over. Ohio State, they have to win the Big Ten tournament just to be mathematically – well, if they win the Big Ten tournament, they get the AQ. So problem solved. But mathematically, if Ohio State loses another game, they're out. So, you know, these guys both playing without a safety net. 19-14, this past weekend, Michigan was able to beat Ohio State. It was 7-7 at halftime, and the Wolverines scored 10 goals. 10 goals in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
To win that game. Mikey Boehm was terrific for Michigan. 8 goals in that game. And it was the big three. You know, Boehm with 8 goals, Zawada with 3, Ryan Cohen with 3. We talked about it last week. This Michigan team has 3 guys with 40 or more points, and it's Boehm, Zawada, and Cohen. And then after them, the next guy has, you know, like 18, 20 points, something like that. So those are the big three that Ohio State's going to have to crack down on. You know, Ohio State, just they're struggling at the faceoff dot, just not getting things. You know, they've had a lot of injuries there. They lost the faceoff battle 29-8 this past weekend. So this is an uphill battle for Ohio State. But as the Buckeyes call Michigan, that team up north, or the team up north, they don't like each other. You know, these teams do not like one another. But again, you got to tip the cap to the Wolverines. It's another step in the evolution of the program. First time hosting a Big Ten tournament game. And that's a big deal.
That's cool.
So, all signs point to Michigan winning this game. But I would not count the Buckeyes out. They're in a corner. They're it's a must win for both teams. So it's going to be a battle in Ann Arbor on Saturday.
And the winner of this game will play Penn State?
Winner of the game plays Penn State. Yeah. So Penn State gets the overall number one seed when Hopkins beat Maryland on Saturday night. Penn State became the one. So Hopkins and Penn State share the regular season Big Ten championship. They both got trophies. But since Penn State beat Hopkins head-to-head, they get the number one seed. Hopkins gets the two.
And in the second game of the quarterfinals in the Big Ten, number 14 Rutgers will play at number 7 Maryland, 8 o'clock BTN.
Yeah, and this is a Rutgers team that is scuffling a little bit right now, offensively for the most part. They had opportunities in the game this past Friday that Joe and I called up at Penn State, 14-5, Nittany Lion win. You know, the game really didn't get that big separation until the fourth quarter. Shot selection, it's not so much shot selection right now. It's just like getting shots for Rutgers. They moved Shane Knobloch down to attack, didn't get tremendous results. Brian Cameron was out of the game. He missed another game, and they're just different when Cameron is out of the lineup. So we'll see if he's healthy enough to play this weekend in College Park. And then Maryland, you know, just uncharacteristically, I think they just made some bad mistakes late in the game in particular. Just couldn't really generate any quality shots, particularly in the fourth quarter, and then just threw the ball away quite a bit, went off sides once or twice. You rarely see a Maryland team beat themselves. And obviously Hopkins had a lot to do with that, but I thought Maryland just was not as clean as they normally are. So look for them to rebound this weekend. And, you know, Rutgers, another team, you know, backs are against the wall. RPI currently for Rutgers sitting at what, 11, I think?
13.
So, and the RPI is going to get even better, you know, or improve at least, or stay this, you know, it's not going to hurt, you know, playing Maryland this weekend, but they need this win. Cause if they get this win, obviously they're still alive for the Big Ten championship, but they insert themselves more fully, not completely, but more fully into the at-large conversation.
And the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays await the winner of this game next Thursday in the Big Ten tournament. That tournament will be at Homewood Field, Dix. And we had, this is our second PSA of this episode. We had a listener send in some restaurant recommendations. Our old friend, Jeff Shannon from Inside Lacrosse.
G-Shan
lives kind of in that Hamden neighborhood, or lives in that area and grew up there, and has a bunch of restaurant recommendations, his favorite spots to go to. I'm going to take that information and I'm going to post it for listeners in the story that appears on Inside Lacrosse this week, so you can prepare for your trip to the Big Ten tournament next weekend if you're coming from out of town. He's got some restaurant recommendations for adults going on your own, as well as if you're coming as a team, if like your high school team or youth team's coming, or a big group, he's got a good recommendation there. And everything is within a couple miles of Hopkins.
Great. G-Shan is Baltimore tried and true. I think the only time he left was when he went down to in New Orleans, went to Tulane for college. So these are some hearty Dixon approved recommendations. I've been to some of these spots. Incredible. So make sure you check that out. That's a must read. One thing I want to touch on, the Big Ten tournament at Johns Hopkins, people are grousing about the start times of the semifinals. I think it's a 1:30 or they're early. What's happening this year is the men's tournament and the women's tournament, the Big Ten, are being held on the same days. So it's Thursday, Saturday for the semifinals in each, and then the championship of each. In the past, it's been men have been Thursday, Saturday. Women have been Friday, Sunday. It's my understanding that the women asked to go Thursday, Saturday because the NCAA women's tournament starts on a Friday. So in essence, when they're playing their championship on Sunday, those two teams typically that make the NCAA tournament have two less days to prepare. So that's why they moved the tournament from Thursday, from Friday, Sunday to Thursday, Saturday. And I believe that may be the case moving forward in the future, and they'll just alternate the time. So the men get the early shift, if you will, for the semifinals and the championship. The women get prime time. I believe that's going to flip in 2024. The women will take the day and the earlier championship time, and then the men will take prime time in both. That's not written in stone. That is just, you know, something that I heard.
Well, it's perfect. G-San's recommendations. You can watch a doubleheader at Homewood Field and head over for a nice dinner on Thursday night or on Saturday. Dix, there's one really important game on Sunday. Number one, Notre Dame, plays at number three, Virginia, on Sunday at 2 o'clock.
A replay of a game a couple weeks ago when Virginia went into South Bend, got out to an early lead, and took down the Irish for their only setback of the season. You know, how does Notre Dame make adjustments? How do they rebound, you know, from that game? They're coming off of the win over North Carolina this past weekend. Virginia riding high. They beat Syracuse this past weekend and then upended Lafayette on Tuesday night. So they're playing good lacrosse. This will be a terrific game. I'm looking forward. The forecast in the Baltimore Ellicott City area on Sunday is like 100% rain. So I'm looking forward to posting up on the couch and watching two great teams slug it out. I mean, much like Duke, you know, you've got Notre Dame and Virginia really in contention for that possible number one seed in the NCAA tournament.
Lots of great action this weekend. Be sure to make your plans now to watch all the games. All right, let's bring in our guest this week, Dr. Larry Parker. He's a spine surgeon based out of Huntsville, Alabama. And I want to hear a little bit about your practice, Dr. Parker, but also I've heard stories that you listen to this podcast sometimes in the operating room. Is this true?
Yes, you guys may not recall back in, it was in March of 2020, just before everything was shut down in the pandemic. And you guys actually mentioned us on air because I think George, who was your first inaugural sponsor and a good friend of mine, I told you guys that we listen to you in the operating room. So yes, we do. We do listen to you guys in the operating room. You know, listening to, you know, something like a podcast in the operating room may make some people have pause a little bit, but really listening to something in the background a little bit just keeps the focus of everybody sort of all tied together and keeps sidebar conversations to a minimum. So having something that keeps everybody focused actually works out really well.
There was definitely music playing when I was having my procedure earlier this week. As the last thing I heard was the Eagles song, Peaceful, Easy Feeling. Before the next thing I knew, I woke up in the recovery room.
I thought it might have been Careless Whisper by Wham.
Another good select. Maybe we'll listen to that today.
So tell me about your practice a little bit.
You know, I'm a spine surgeon. That's all I do. You know, I, as far as being a sponsor to you guys, it's more about me just supporting what you guys do than promoting my practice a bit. I do have a website that I put together that I can send my patients to that they can look at a procedure, they can learn. It's a nice just way to say, hey, go learn more and you know about what your problem is or what we're talking about surgically or procedurally. And so, you know, I think that's something that has some application for people, you know, outside of my area, outside of where my practice area is, that might, you know, be able to take advantage of some of that information. So my website, I think, is something that people could use around the country.
And that URL for his website is LarryParkerMD.com. LarryParkerMD.com. Where does lacrosse rank in terms of injuries compared to other sports?
You know, it's not at the top. It's really in the middle. If you, in just terms of incidents, basketball is number one. Football would be number two. Baseball, I think even like field hockey is above lacrosse, but lacrosse is sort of sitting in the middle as far as injuries occur.
The basketball surprises me. Is that because of participation rate? There's more people playing basketball than some of those other like thought of contact sports?
It's probably that. And also, you know, a lot of injuries are not catastrophic injuries, just wear and tear injuries, ankle injuries, strains, sprains, those types of things. You know, maybe that's why basketball is up there at the top.
And how would you spine specific lacrosse injuries? How can a player avoid injury? Like, what is suggestions?
Yeah, so in spine, you know, fortunately, we don't see as many injuries. You know, as a spine surgeon in my practice, I don't see as many lacrosse injuries or sports related injuries as perhaps, you know, my partners that are doing shoulders and knees and ankles. But we do see some. You know, the first thing that you always think about with an on field injury, unfortunately, it's not as common in lacrosse, is a collision injury that can lead, you know, that would involve a neck injury typically, where there's an on the field incident where, you know, a player's down and you worry about a catastrophic neck injury. There are some examples of that in lacrosse. Interestingly, just looking, you know, doing a search on that in the last 10 years, there were a couple of examples, both in high school lacrosse and both in the South, where neck injuries occurred that led to partial paralysis in one player and paralysis in another player. And I don't know if anyone's listening from those. I think one of those injuries was in Texas and the other was in South Carolina. So if anyone's listening that was involved with that, our thoughts are with you, because that's a catastrophic event and it's an ongoing issue for years and beyond in terms of taking care of somebody that's had that kind of incident. So fortunately, we don't see a lot of that. You know, lacrosse is more of an eye-to-eye type of interface between the offensive and defensive player. So except when there's a, you know, the ball's on the ground and there's an unsettled situation, you know, typically the collision or the contact between players is going to be with the head up, which is good. Most of the catastrophic injuries are going to occur, you know, in a head down scenario.
How would you best describe the lacrosse in the South? You know, the evolution of the game. We're seeing a lot of collegiate players, you know, coming from down South. You know, the Bernhardt brothers come to mind, you know, from the state of Florida, Florida, Jack Jasinski, Alabama, Scott Ratliff, you know, that Atlanta area. We're seeing Braden Irksa, freshman at University of Maryland, from that Georgia area. How would you best describe the, you know, the scene of lacrosse down South?
Mark, you know, I think it's definitely it's a growing sport. I think for the Southern fan, I think you mentioned, I think last week, describing lacrosse as sort of a combination between hockey and basketball and maybe football. I think the Southern lacrosse fan really identifies with the football piece of that. I think the game may be played a little more physically. It's not going to look like a bunch of Canadians playing small ball down here. There's going to be a lot more, you know, downhill dodging, spot up shooting. So the game may have a little bit more physical presence to it than maybe what you would see in areas where, you know, the stick work is a little more sophisticated. So the game is growing. And I think in the Atlanta area, it's massive. You know, where we sit in Huntsville, we're close to Atlanta. We're close to Nashville, Birmingham. So just seeing the lacrosse is really growing in those areas. On the lacrosse side, the ASUN conference championship was in Huntsville for whatever reason last year.
Yeah.
We had Air Force and Bellarmine down here. And let's see, a couple other schools, I can't recall. But anyway, so we get some lacrosse down here for sure. One of the problems with Southern lacrosse is the lack of schools, college opportunities for kids down here to go and play. So all these kids, I mean, if you look, like to your point, and out of the state of Georgia, there's players on almost every roster across the landscape. There's kids from Alabama now, so it's just pumping more players into the pipeline that's competing for those spots on those teams. And be nice to see the South step up a little bit, you know, on the collegiate level, particularly the SEC, and jump into the game of lacrosse at the college level.
I'll ask both of you guys this: what would be if a new men's program or one or two was developed in the South? What do you think the right school for that could be?
All right. Well, I think Georgia is a good option. I'm biased. I mean, full disclosure, I went to Auburn, but sitting in Alabama and just knowing what the Alabama brand is, I think it would bring a tremendous presence to lacrosse if the University of Alabama had a program. University of Georgia is the same. Florida, you know, the first question is Florida really part of the South? Obviously it is, but it's kind of a different world down there. University of Florida would be absolutely a great place to see a program.
University of Florida has a women's program that is very successful. So I agree with you on that. Georgia, Alabama, that'd be incredible. I have reffed Florida State before in a club collegiate game. It was years ago. They came up to the University of Maryland. It was Florida State versus Boston College. I don't know, BC's up in the Northeast, but BC used to have a Division I men's program. The one program that I really would love to see take the next step, well, there's two in addition to the ones we just mentioned. But next step, what I mean by that, Clemson, who just started a women's program. And then Georgia Tech, a fellow Loyola Don, Ken Lovick, is the head coach there. He graduated a year ahead of me in high school from Loyola High School in the Baltimore area. And they're successful, you know, in their campaigns collegiately. So those are some of the schools I'd love to see pick the sport up.
I'm going to throw in Vanderbilt as another one.
They have great call. Program, great call.
And I think that there is a chance that, you know, it seems like the right type of school, type of student they attract also for expansion into men's lacrosse. All right, this is a good topic. Let's get into our give and go this week. And it's related to things in the South.
Hi, this is Hannah, Vivian, and Zoe from the 2032 HOCO Flamingos lacrosse team. Now it's time for this week's Give and Go on the Deep Fly and the Dixie podcast. Let's get it!
Way to go, HOCO Flamingos. We have really made it. We have really, really made it when the Give and Go is being introduced by the HOCO Flamingos. Thank you, ladies. Appreciate that. Look at how far we've come from staring at each other in the IL offices when you insisted I came in person to the evolution. I mean, top coaches every week, sponsorships, introduction to the Give and Go. There's so many layers to the D-Fly Dixie podcast. It's amazing.
It's a real show. We're here to entertain. So let's get into this with Dr. Parker. So I just want to get you got your opinion on these, because as you know, Larry, there are the South has its idiosyncrasies like any other place. And there are certain things that just happen down there that are just different in other places. For instance, like the word using the word Coke, you know, it's based home in Atlanta. Coke is like just what any soda is, right? Like that's just a term that you use. Like you want a Coke, and it could be any soft drink, right?
Yes, I think it would be analogous to saying pop on the East Coast. But yes, Coke means you want a soft drink.
And then the use of like yes, ma'am, yes, sir, no, ma'am, no, sir, just the properness of formal speaking.
Mark, what are your thoughts on yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, that kind of formality?
So I have two boys, and we taught them early, you know, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. But I think it's more as you get older, at least maybe this is an East Coast, Mid-Atlantic kind of thing. As you get older, that's looked at as being kind of like a kissing butt kind of thing. So I find it to be more important to, you know, look someone in the eye, shake their hand, you know, eye contact, respect. But yeah, I guess maybe folks down the South use those kind of formal replies or greetings or whatever more than up here. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, you know, my kids, they're not going to say yes, sir, no, sir to me typically. But if they met one of you guys initially, they're probably going to, you know, say, yes, sir, nice to meet you, be a little bit more formal, or maybe to their grandparents. But to your point, Mark, there is a point where, you know, it needs to fade away, and it becomes a direct conversation between two people. It's not necessary.
We have this weird thing in Maryland that where I grew up in Delaware, not far away. We didn't do this, but we would call people like Mr. Flynn, Mr. Dixon. Here they like Mr. Mark or Mr. Yeah. Larry. I don't know. They call people by their like other adults. They, you know, so their kids. And I it's a weird thing. Do they do that in the South?
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because having, you know, traveling up in the Midwest and on the East Coast, yeah, that's, you know, people say they'll call me Dr. Larry. And, you know, I'm not down here. That doesn't really happen.
Right.
You know, I think it's something more unique to your parts of the country, perhaps.
And then even in my neighborhood, for some reason, there's certain people that my kids who are 7 and 9 call Mr. Scott, Mr. John, and other ones that they call by their last name. Like, oh, that's Mr. Fouts. That's Mr. Roth. And it's just an interesting dynamic. I don't know where that starts, but I think it's funny.
I know in the Baltimore area, it's kind of where you grew up. So growing up in Catonsville, it was always Mr. Flynn. You know, I know you're a doctor, Dr. Parker, but Mr. Parker. And then I dated a girl who lived in the like the outskirts of the Towson area, more towards like Belvedere. So a little bit more closer to the city. And her neighborhood was, Mr. Dan, Mr. Larry, that kind of thing. So it's also just like it could be a neighborhood thing.
Okay, you guys ready for this? Give and go. All right. I want to give some rapid fires here. Okay, so it's going to be like a southern thing versus like a northern thing. Ready? And I want to get your opinion. We'll start with you, Dix, to get yours, because I think I know where this is going to land, but we'll get both your opinions. Iced tea versus sweet tea.
Sweet tea all day. I love sweet tea. So good. Chick-fil-A and Mission Barbecue up here have great, which is probably sacrilege to Dr. Parker, but those are the two places up here that have really good sweet tea.
Yeah, down here, I would put it all together. Sweet iced tea is probably how, you know, we'd think of it. It's the original energy drink, right? You get some sugar, you get some caffeine. You know, in the hot day, it's hard to beat. It's a solid play for sure.
All right. Country music versus rock and blues music.
Go ahead, Dr. Parker.
You know, classic old school country music. You know, I was not much of a fan. Now, I did go see George Jones in concert. He was always, you know, famous for not showing up. And true to his word, he played one song and left the stage. And his producer came in and said, "Old George isn't feeling good tonight." And that was the end of the concert. That was back in my college days. But you know, rock and roll was kind of the thing I grew up on. But today's country music, you know, kind of the bro country sound, I actually like it. It reminds me of what pop music, what, you know, just top 40 music was back in the 80s. So I like the new sound. A lot of people I know don't like it, but, you know, I like it. So
I like both. I think I'm probably more of a rock music guy, but I do listen to country. Our current artist, I love Luke Combs. I like Maren Morris. She's really good. There's a couple of others. I remember I started listening to country when I was in high school. Hank Williams Jr. I had a Hank Williams Jr. live tape, and I love that tape. I wore that thing out. So I think it depends on what you're in the mood for, but I appreciate both, you know, both genres of music.
Yeah, another good singer today is Morgan Wallen. I'm not sure how you say his last name. Interestingly, he had a concert in Nashville. A lot of the people in the hospital I work with were all set up to go to the concert. And he pulled a no-show 10 minutes before the start of the show on Saturday night. So that's made the news in the country music world for sure.
That guy doesn't have a lot of room for error these days either.
No, he does not.
I would say the George Jones no-show back then, that's like a gangster move. Like that's a gangster move. One song and you leave.
I don't know. That's how you drive bands away.
There was no refund either.
Of course not. All right. Big Ten football versus SEC football.
Oh boy. I think I said this last week. I like Big Ten football better just because it's a little grittier. Not as flashy, but I will say this. I have a buddy from college, a teammate of mine. We played together at Hopkins. Him and a bunch of friends every year would, and I don't know if he still does it, but they would go to one college football game a year as a group, and they would rotate conferences. So they go to an SEC game. Oh, I'm sorry, like a Big Ten game, ACC, Pac-12.
They Hopkins went to Muhlenberg. Hopkins Muhlenberg.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever made a Centennial Conference game, but they went to an SEC game, and I want to say it was Ole Miss, Florida, maybe. And after they went there, they said, "Okay, we're just doing a different SEC game every year." They said the SEC vibe and environment just blew all the others out of the water.
I think I know how our Auburn grad's going to answer this one.
Well, you know, I certainly have a bias to the SEC football. It's a good Saturday. The whole event, the games are really intense. The Auburn Alabama rivalry, in particular, is a great event, and I definitely, you guys would enjoy that for sure. But you know, I've enjoyed more. I like to watch Big Ten football too. It is a little different. The game is perhaps a little grittier. To your point, the weather's different, obviously, later in the year. You know, Penn State came down and beat Auburn down here last year very handily, and beat them up there the year before that. So, you know, it's they're both very good products.
All right, a couple of rapid fire ones. Krispy Kreme versus Dunkin' Donuts.
On my end, now the Krispy Kreme is more of the southern side of that equation, but I'm a Dunkin' Donut guy. I'm going to do Dunkin' Donuts if I have a choice. I like the sour cream Dunkin' Donut all day long.
Dunkin' Donuts is garbage. Krispy Kreme isn't much better, but I would go Krispy Kreme in that equation. My favorite donut is Stan's Donuts in Chicago. They are unbelievable. I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago for games, and I had the chocolate old-fashioned, which is a chocolate donut glazed with chocolate frosting. Oh, my God. That thing was unbelievable.
All right, here's one for you. Heat versus humidity.
You got to go with heat all day long. Humidity crushes you. I'll take heat. I'll take straight heat all day long.
Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of redeeming qualities about humidity. It's certainly pervasive in the summer down here. It is, you know, up on the East Coast too in the summer, but it's I agree. You know, give me a dry heat over the humidity.
All right, last one. A good slice of pizza versus a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
Ooh, that's tough. I do like Chick-fil-A. I do like their sandwiches, but New York, like a New York slice. Shout out Jordan Ozer, SID for Rutgers. He treated us to Krusty Pizza in the press box a couple weeks ago for the Maryland Rutgers game up at SHI Stadium, and a good, you know, New York, New Jersey slice just hits different.
I think the Chick-fil-A is a bit overrated, being from the South. I may get kicked out of the South after I said that, but yeah, I'll take the pizza.
Yeah, I would too. My kids are like, you know, they're kids. They love Chick-fil-A. That's all they want to eat all the time. And I can't eat it anymore. I get a salad. I get a salad from Chick-fil-A. It's sad.
Get the grilled nuggets and throw some ranch and buffalo sauce in there, and then like shake it up. And then maybe toss it on your salad or just eat it plain. Like it's good.
The sweet iced tea is really good.
Sweet iced tea. I do like that. I'd like to ask Dr. Parker, though. I think a more fair question would be Chick-fil-A or Popeyes or Raising Cane's. Because Cane's is starting to come into the Baltimore.
I would say the Raising Cane's.
Gotcha. A lot of people love that.
I don't know this place. I don't know Raising Cane's.
You will. It's coming.
That's good stuff.
Okay. I think that's a good place to stop. I'd like to thank our guest this week, Dr. Larry Parker. You can find more information on LarryParkerMD.com. Army head coach, Joe Alberici. Best of luck to the Black Knights this week and throughout the rest of the season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you. You can email me at dbflynn@gmail.com. That's D as in Dan, B as in Bennett, flynn.com at gmail.com. On Twitter, he's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY. And as always, enjoy the games.